Ready, set, go!
This is the Checkpoint Radio Podcast. Tune into our weekly radio show. For more information, go to checkpointradio.com. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to the Checkpoint Radio Podcast from Westwood One. Exclusive, uncensored, and extended conversations from the nationally syndicated crew of the Checkpoint Radio Show. My name's Nate Bender. I'm joined by the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis.
What up?
Norris Howard.
Ballin'.
And over at the Checkpoint News Desk, Joe Sloan.
Psyched to be here. I can't follow that.
And okay, so a couple of things that we should address right out of the gate. We have been on the Westwood One Podcast Network for a while now.
12 years.
And not quite.
No.
I read a tweet last night and got very excited because I found out that Opie from the Opie and Anthony Show, one of the shows that I've spent the most time listening to, is actually going to be starting a show on the Westwood One Podcast Network. So congratulations to Greg. We're excited to be podcast neighbors with him and Chris Jericho and JR.
We're podcast neighbors.
We're in this,
I dig it.
Yeah. So
podcast pals.
But like honestly, like I've spent so many hours listening to Opie and Anthony growing up that
can you tell?
It is it's kind of like I'm honored. I'm oddly honored to be on the same podcast network as Opie. That's
We're
exciting.
All soldiers now.
All right.
I'm sure Opie
second
feels
thing,
the same way.
Second thing we got to address right out of the gate is that Chris, our fill-in for Norris for a couple of weeks, has left his drop board with us, and so Norris has taken up the position on drops. This is the first time that you've actually done drops
for
Checkpoint. Yeah. I think you did pretty well.
I think you're better than Chris.
I agree. I do think you did better than Chris.
Yeah, I don't want to, be over the top with it.
I understand.
Start
squelching voices.
Yeah, one or two well placed drops is better than just trying to throw them left and right, which is what Chris does.
Yeah, yeah. I use the drops more liberally in the podcast?
You can. It doesn't matter.
Think of the podcast.
I should probably still use the Checkpoint drops, though, right?
An experimental sort of ground.
Actually, you can widen it out. We're on the podcast
within reason.
Yeah,
within reason is a good way of looking at it.
Yeah,
I know some of our drops. There's a few that gay.
Yeah. Well, we've got our gay shield here. So.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Cool. I'm a trans shield. I mean,
trans shield. Whatever. Now we're
they're different things, Nathan.
LGBTQ shield.
There you go.
Now we're splitting hairs. All right, fine. That's an all encompassing term.
Better than splitting dicks.
which
you are a bigot.
We've got some great drops in here.
These are really good.
Some classics.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited for because there's like I think there's some like 1,200 different drops that we have.
There's a lot
because I gave them all to you, Norris.
Yeah.
I'm excited for you to go through them and actually
I've sifted through
take some ownership of some of these drops. That's going to be great.
I got some that I have that I'm actually going to add.
Norris in the chat, Stank Buddha says, "Have you got to tell you guys? I competed in the Capcom online tourney on Saturday for the West Coast Regional. Apparently he got fisted pretty bad."
Ooh.
It's
ha, gay.
Oh my god.
Were you on that one, Norris?
He was on the wrong page for it.
I was actually trying to look for his comment.
Oh, man. All right. Well, usually we start off this show by reading an iTunes review, which we're going to do. And I actually had to dip into a bit of the resources that Westwood One gives us because we're able to actually check out all of our iTunes reviews, regardless of the region.
Oh, and nice.
I know Van Kid has been very emphatic about wanting us to read his review on the show, so I've got his review. But I just want to say that right now, currently, we are standing at 43 total reviews. We want to make sure that number continues to climb because it's a little embarrassing. It lists us on the same page as the rest of the Westwood One podcasts.
Oh,
so it's like,
great.
When we see our 43, it doesn't feel so great when it's paired up against you know, talk is Jericho's 1,043 reviews.
Well, that's not fair. But he's been a professional wrestler for like 30 years.
Yeah. Jericho. It's a totally different thing there.
How about the Eric Zane show? I don't know who that is either, but he's got 41 reviews.
We have more than him.
He's nipping at our heels, though.
Right.
Let's complain about it.
Listen. While I love our Westwood One brethren and our podcast brethren,
our podcast pals,
I also want to beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
I'm also very competitive. So we want
more reviews than Chris Jericho.
Well, yes, I want to beat Talk Is Jericho in number of reviews. I know that that's a big bar to set. But come on.
Yultina said, I forgot to leave a review. Then do it now.
Why not?
Listen to us. Do it.
You're thinking about it right now. We're telling you about it right now. Go do it. All right. So we're going to read a review from Van Kid because he was so insistent that we read it. By the way, we can now also share these as well.
Oh,
so
awesome.
We're going to be hitting social media with a lot of these reviews because I love what you guys have to say about the show. But here's what Van Kid has to say. Here's your Canadian review. You guys are great. You're always interacting with your Twitch followers. You also interact with your social media followers, and you guys are genuinely awesome and hilarious. Thanks for everything, and keep doing what you do.
Aww. All right.
Thank you, Van Kid.
We appreciate it.
Try speaking American. It's the only language I understand.
To be fair, I mean, it was written in English, so there is that.
It was written in Canadian English.
It was Canadian English.
Now, here's the thing, all right? We've got a couple of more reviews that have come in the last week. One from the UK, one from the US. You're going to have to keep listening and downloading the podcast to be able to hear those, but we're excited to be able to read those. So
I want
to
hear the UK one.
If you want to leave us a review so that we can read it here on the podcast, just search Checkpoint Radio on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever you use to refer to it as, and leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Okay, we're going to talk about Infinity War, but here's the thing, right?
Oh boy,
we have all seen it at least more than once, and we are going into full spoiler mode.
Yep.
Okay.
So many spoilers.
Nothing held back.
Exactly. We're going to talk about every nitty gritty detail that we picked out on our multiple viewings.
9 total between all of us
of Infinity War. So this is your last chance to get out now. If you have not seen Infinity War, we will forgive you if you pause this episode and just come back to it later. We know that you're going to want to come back because after watching Infinity War, that's all you're going to want to do. You're just going to want to talk about it. Yep. So come back
and
once you've seen the movie, then, you know, unpause this episode because we are venturing into spoiler territory.
I think we have about 37 minutes that we can talk about Infinity War before we have to get on with the radio review.
Yes. So, okay. Have we given enough spoiler warning?
Yes.
I think
yes.
so.
Yeah. We are literally about to start now.
All right. Let's talk Infinity War.
Everyone you love is dead.
It's kind of true.
as an interesting point, we did a thing last time where we talked about who's your dark horse candidate for who's going to die.
Yep.
I think we were
all
right.
Everybody was right.
No, I wasn't. I picked Okoye.
Oh, that's true. Right. Well, Robbie sucks, but everyone who matters was right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I think I picked at least most of the Guardians.
I picked Guardians.
He picked Bucky.
I picked Spider-Man and Tom Holland.
Both of them.
Doctor Strange. They both died.
Yeah. They both ended up eating it. So there was a big question before Infinity War even came out. Is the snap even going to happen?
Yes.
So happy.
The way that the film was described early on in some, you know, production interviews was that it was sort of like a road trip movie where you're collecting things along the way. And
right.
And it's this really kind of at the heart of it.
Thanos' story.
Oh, yeah, it was 100%
his collecting
story.
The gems and all kind of building to the snap. And a lot of people were unsure that Marvel had the stones to do the
testicular fortitude.
And
they had 6 stones to do that with, guys.
The snap happened. So that was, I think, the biggest, of course, the biggest thing that everyone is talking about.
Should
is
we
that
just start from the beginning of the movie?
Now half of the MCU is dead.
Yeah.
And that is, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely makes you wish there wasn't a year until the next one.
Yeah, although
I this ended for me in a way to where, I mean, yes, obviously there are questions, but this was a definitive enough end for me that I walked out of this actually feeling, obviously, you know, torn down and whatnot. But when I removed the emotion from it, like, it was an end. It was a satisfying end to the movie.
Well, and I think the time in between, you know, when we get Captain Marvel, I think is good, because part of what we talked about many times about the Marvel movies, you get burned out. There's no way you could go see all of them, you know, when they do a theater release. You know what I mean?
But so, it's not like we're not going to have any Marvel movies between.
Well, yeah, you get
now,
Ant-Man
you
and
get
Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's actually what, that's July that's coming out?
Yep.
I'm super excited for that, even though it does, ostensibly, it has no impact on Infinity War.
Because it does take place, they said, I don't know
after
if they said
it's not
specifically
that,
when, but it takes place before Infinity
War. It's not that it has no impact, but at the same time, as the first film coming out after Infinity War, you would have to think that there's some sort of tie-ins
that
to
there's
what
gonna be
happened.
Something. Maybe it's a post-credit sequence. We don't know.
Yeah, whatever
that
it may be.
Seems likely.
Yeah, that's
whatever
what
it may be. You know what I mean?
So but I'm actually very excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp. The girl who plays the Wasp,
Evangeline Lilly.
Evangeline Lilly, one of my favorite actresses from Lost.
Mm.
So I really liked her in the first Ant-Man. And weirdly, the first Ant-Man movie gets a lot of hate, and I really enjoyed it. Okay, so
I like the first Ant-Man movie.
I do too.
Who hates Ant-Man?
A lot of people didn't like how it didn't tie in as much to the central universe.
That's
and
fair.
And I guess I can understand that part, but I think it works as its own thing. And then of course we've got Captain Marvel. We've got
that's what I'm
you
hyped
know,
for.
I'm hype off Captain Marvel.
I love that it's set in the 90s.
Yes. And I
don't love that I'm old enough that my decade I grew up in can now be a period
can
piece.
Can now be a period piece.
I'm not happy about that.
This is true. Question though, do you think that the Captain Marvel movie retroactively will end up introducing the Skrull and the Kree-Skrull conflict?
Yeah, it's supposed to be based in the Kree-Skrull war.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's the crux of her conflict.
Yeah.
And by the end of that, we see how she ties into being, you know, contacted by Nick Fury and stuff like that, and how she eventually is going to be injected for Avengers 4.
They're also bringing back some old faces. Lee Pace is going to be Ronan the Accuser.
The Accuser.
We're going to see a young Phil Coulson.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
That's cool. I'm excited for that, because I think you do need to, at this point, give some backstory on Captain Marvel, especially if you need someone to kind of come in and act as a bit of a deus ex machina to be able to
a cosmic level.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, all right, let's kind of go through some of the big points of Infinity War, because there was a lot
here.
There's a lot. Two and a half hour film
from the moment it picks up. I mean, we're on board the Asgardian ship from the end of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, and we were right on that one, where it's just right into the killing.
And it's a bad day.
The opening.
Once again, half the Asgardians have been wiped out. So they've had that happen a few times now. They're having a real rough go of it.
Yes, they are.
So Thanos goes ahead and wipes out half the Asgardians. Valkyrie is confirmed to have survived. She's leading the remaining Asgardians back to Earth.
Now, that was just not confirmed in film.
That was confirmed in an interview. Apparently, what we didn't see, what happened off screen, was the pods
escape from that
ship and carrying half of the Asgardians on it.
We see, very importantly, the Hulk get the hell beaten out of his world.
First of all, can we all agree that it was really satisfying for Loki to finally be able to say, "We have a Hulk"?
Yeah, well,
it was good to hear.
They gave him that line, obviously. But
so the Hulk gets his ass beat, and it's a major plot point, because that's pretty much all we see of him in this movie. He's afraid. He's shook.
In terms of the Hulk is the big green guy. Yeah. Don't see much of him. It's just really that opening scene where he is just getting rocked by Thanos.
Yeah, Thanos.
And I mean, just completely overpowers him like it's nothing. And, in the very last moments, being sent back to Earth by Heimdall and in kind of taking up the mantle or at least the purpose that Silver Surfer served in the comic books as a kind of like pre-warning that Thanos is coming.
A herald.
Like he gets dumped into the middle of New York, into the Sanctum Sanctorum. And obviously, you know, you've got Doctor Strange at that point. Iron Man is not that far behind. Those heroes group up along with Spider-Man.
So your New York based heroes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. To kind of deal with the threat in New York, which was two of the Black Order.
Ebony Maw and Call Obsidian.
Yes. Now, Ebony Maw, also known as Squidward.
unless you watch the French version, then he was Voldemort.
Hang on, that's funny. I didn't know that.
Both good ones.
Yep. Who was the actor that played him?
Oh, he did so well, though. Out of the four, Ebony Maw was my favorite.
Oh, my God, was he good.
He was so good.
Oh, my God, was he good. I was so impressed by his performance.
A lot of the stories that I've been reading
are
saying...
Obviously not impressed enough to look him up. But.
Well, right. A lot of the stories that I was seeing was calling out saying that the Black Order was like the weakest part of Infinity War. And while I get where the sentiment is coming from, like the focus is on the heroes and on Thanos. So
and they're
they could only
technically.
Yes, yeah, they were only there to serve so much purpose anyhow.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, and I think that, you know, what I expected, because of course I have a lot of context from the comic books of the character of Thanos, I was expecting a way more viciously violent, unhinged character.
Dude, I have no hate for Thanos whatsoever.
Well, let's talk about Josh Brolin's performance because
amazing.
It is probably the highlight of the entire film.
Yeah.
They did a great job of taking Thanos, a patently boring character, and making him very
outside of the gauntlet.
He has the gauntlet, but he's only interesting for what he does, for the snap and for the gauntlet. His motive sucks usually, and he's not an exciting character. They made him interesting. Well, Josh Brolin, and just so
people know, we may have people watching who are fans of the cinematic universe but not necessarily have read the comic books. The main motivation for Thanos in the comic books is that he literally fell in love with the embodiment of death.
Lady Death.
Plus, Bad Guys 101, that's Thanos. He's just an evil dude who likes to kill shit.
Right, and he doesn't just like to kill shit. He kills shit specifically to impress Lady Death.
He also likes it, though.
But in the movie, though, they've stripped out all of the Lady Death stuff, which, first of all, brilliant move, smart move. Well, there were some people who, before this came out, were theorizing that Hela was going to be taking the place of Lady Death.
Yep.
That would have been the worst.
That would have been stupid.
Cate Blanchett would have sat there and chewed the scenery the entire time and ruined all of Thanos' performance.
Not to mention that would have been the first time he saw her, so it would have literally been Thanos, love at first sight on Hela. Let's collect a Infinity
Stone. Let's go kill half the universe.
Right. Well, and that wouldn't have made sense because he's got, you know, ostensibly 10 years of machinations that are finally coming to fruition and paying off. I mean, it's 18 fucking films that very slowly his plan has been unfolding for, and it's this day. I mean, really, Infinity War takes place over the course of a day, and that makes it perfectly clear by the end of the film. I thought was really impressive the way that they changed
the pacing
and the motivation of Thanos. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'd also like to point out to some people in the chat too, Stank Boot is saying that he's literally just a Darkseid ripoff or Darkseid ripoff, whatever. And if you look him up, apparently like that's something that was admitted at some point, is they just wanted to make their own Darkseid.
Marvel's Darkseid.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What this movie did with Thanos, as far as I'm concerned, puts him leagues above Darkseid.
So instead of basing his motivation in trying to impress some you know, supernatural body. Instead, he is obsessed with balance.
Yeah, cold calculus.
Yes. And it's made very clear over the course of the film a few times that, you know, what he is doing by collecting the Infinity Stones and putting them together with the gauntlet to end half the life in the universe with a snap of his fingers is something that he genuinely believes is a mercy.
Is the right thing to do.
It is the right thing to do.
And he says it, I think, very succinctly. He said, resources are finite.
Yeah.
It's a math problem.
And how awesome is it for Marvel and the writers of Infinity War and the Russo brothers to put that type of kind of meta narrative into a superhero film? And not just that, but also show how even a benevolent ideology, even a, in a weird way, noble ideology, can be twisted into such a way.
It's almost speaking to something like the banality of evil. That was like a big theme that I walked away from it as, where, you know, you can be sympathetic and kind of understand the motivations of someone, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really end the fact that you're ending half the life in the universe.
Right, exactly.
Norris, you're talking about the meta narrative, and Nate, you mentioned it in pre-show when we were talking, that in an era where more and more young people are choosing not to have kids,
absolutely,
both for concerns of resources on the planet and for the fact that our planet's kind of going to hell in a handbasket, it's a very interesting narrative for Thanos to then come out and say, like, no, that's exactly the problem, and that is why I'm ending half of life.
And he brings that up when he's talking to Gamora, and he says, you know, you killed half the population of my entire planet, little babies and families. And he says, look at it now, though.
Yes.
It's a paradise.
That's a paradise.
That's what I really respect, is this. When we see his motivations, it's not just him raving about something that he can't see or that no one else has seen. What he's put into practice
is measurable.
Has given him results. Yeah, it's a paradise now.
And not just that, the way that, you know, he's not the embodiment of frustration. It's not. This is just something that he understands and he has the will to do.
Oh, he said it.
But this, exactly. But that is the lie that powerful people tell themselves all the time, is that I only have the will to do this. Yes. This is a hard thing.
It's what everyone would choose to do if they had the balls
to do it.
Yeah. And that is, I think, a really interesting theme to put at the heart of the movie in 2018.
Well, in the path to hell, man. He embodies that in the film to me. It's like, you know, his intentions, I don't want to necessarily say are good. They're just based in this weird neutrality, there's a logic to it. And so I think he sees himself more as not necessarily a megalomaniac because he doesn't want to rule it, but more as a force of nature that I need to represent this weird force of nature.
One of the other important things to point out too, because then this is the reason why I can't hate him or say that or really say that he's evil in the same way that other villains are, is the amount of times that he could have killed people, like when they were on Nowhere at the Collector's base. Yeah. He straight up used the gauntlet on Drax and Mantis, but specifically, right, just incapacitated them because he, I think, realizes that I don't have the right to judge any one person. I'm not going to be the one
them. Right, he picks it all at random. And that, even on his planet, he said, you know, I would choose it at random. Money and status has no meaning.
Yep. Yeah. Dispassionate, completely random, fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a pretty amazing and stark theme to put at the heart of the biggest movie in almost a decade.
You get this repeating theme in the movie of them saying, we're not going to sacrifice one person for more people.
Oh, right.
You get killed Vision.
You get that's the point, though. And it blows up in their face. The whole idea of them trying to keep Vision alive screwed everything up.
Yeah.
But you don't only see it that time. You see it with Doctor Strange handing over the time, literally handing over the time stone for one person's life.
Yeah.
And that blows up in his face. Or did it? Of course, or did it?
We don't know yet.
Gamora should have offed herself.
Exactly. Trying to keep Peter Quill, keeping Gamora alive. Even though, I mean, eventually he did try, but
Gamora with Nebula. It would have been nothing for her to just say, you know what?
It continuously,
my sister's not worth a trillion billion lives.
Right, yeah. And it continuously fails, this idea of trying to save one person at the expense of others. And I think that what they're trying to drive at with the movie is, like, that's such a great ideal and so hard to stick to, and we're not going to see it succeed until the next movie.
Yes, I think the next movie, Avengers 4, a major theme and component of that story is going to be sacrifice and self-sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. For others,
yes.
Now, of course, it does stand to mention the core Avengers all survived this movie.
Plus Rocket.
Do they sacrifice themselves in the next movie to get other people back?
Well, and that's the thing, because at some point there has to be some passing of the mantle, right? And we talked about that previously. Even after Avengers 4, I think the only of the core Avengers that makes sense to keep around is Thor.
Thor, yeah.
Someone you can put out in the cosmic universe and not see him on Earth anymore.
Yeah, put him in the cosmic universe, still be a bridge back to whatever is happening on Earth, but not just narratively, but also, you know,
Thor would be
canonically,
like,
it makes sense to have them in both places.
Totally,
right.
Yeah.
When the next phase is equivalent of Infinity War comes around, Thor is the guy who brings the Nova Corps or the Guardians of the Galaxy or whoever. He's like oh, something's happening on Earth,
Watch.
We gotta go.
Something has to happen with the gauntlet after they get it off of Thanos and undo a lot of the damage. I don't know that we're going to see one life traded for another. I don't think that that's going to happen. What I think is going to happen is that, you know, through the events of trying to get the gauntlet back from Thanos, you're going to lose one or two people, and it's going to be because they made the hard decision of making the sacrifice.
Okay, let me ask you this, because what I'm having a hard time trying to visualize is, because of Thanos' motivation now, right? He did what he wanted to do. So as far as he's concerned, mission accomplished. End of the movie.
Also, by the way, another reason that Thanos is a great villain. He isn't a megalomaniac who just wants to rule everything. He said, when I'm done, no, I want to go sit on my planet and watch the sunset,
exactly,
knowing that I did what I believe is right.
Which is a nod to what he did after the events of the Infinity Gauntlet storyline in the comics, is he literally became a farmer. You see, one of the final scenes is Adam Warlock coming to check in on Thanos, who has just become a simple farmer.
Right, so the point that I'm trying to make here is that at the end of the movie, he's sitting there smiling, and what reason in the next movie does he have to really want to do it? He saved the universe. If he were to die, or if his life were to be threatened, I don't think that's going to bother him, because he did what he set out to do. So between who we have left, who goes to Thanos? Who even knows where to find Thanos? I feel like something has to happen in the story that brings Thanos back.
Yes.
Thanos returns.
That is what's going to happen. And I think that... So in the original book, what we had is, after he ends half of life in the universe, Lady Death doesn't give a fuck.
Right.
She does not care.
Right.
And he goes out of his... He loses his mind.
But that can't happen.
No, it can't, except...
Hang on.
Now he's going to be stuck living with his guilt with Gamora. And he's going to be talking to that little girl, Gamora, who's going to call him a piece of shit and say, it
stuck
wasn't worth what you
world.
Did at all.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're a piece of shit.
So what, what does that cause him to do? How does it, like, in driving him mad, what?
I mean, it could cause him to snap, because technically the gauntlet is damaged. We don't know if it's completely out of commission or not. But
right.
No.
That whole side of him, by the way, upon watching it again, like, he looks
pretty
beat
up.
We don't know if he's just lost some of the ability to use the stones, if he can't use them at all, whatever. But the whole point is that if that soul stone is still intact, you know, Gamora, as it was in the comics, Gamora is still technically in a state of undeath, right? She's in limbo.
She was sacrificed for the Soul Stone.
Yeah, she was sacrificed. She's in limbo.
In my opinion, the scene that we see with Thanos directly after the snap, when he's in the orange world that has the liquid floor, and he talks to the child Gamora.
In like real time, because she's literally talking about, did you do it?
Right.
You killed me. Did you do it?
Right. I believe that that's Soul World,
that
would make a whole lot of sense, where, you know, assuming that, you know, they're able to unsnap a lot of those deaths in the third Guardians movie, because we know that there is a third Guardians movie that will have to do with Adam Warlock. It would make a lot of sense if Adam Warlock's power allowed him to be able to enter the Soul Stone. I mean, in the comics, it's embedded in his forehead, right? But, you know, that was the origin of Gamora. Thanos had sent her into the Soul World to try to try to be able to get him access to the Soul Gem. So you know, it's not exactly the same, but to
but essentially sort of the same thing as what we saw.
I could see another story taking a lot of influence from that Adam Warlock storyline, yep, and have it be about the Guardians having to get Gamora back,
yep,
and Adam Warlock goes in and encounters her in Soul World, mm, and is the only one who can get her back out.
No, I think that's a perfect example, but I think that is part of a motivator that could cause him to go back. But also on top of that is that we saw what Strange did in giving him the time gem, and he's already said there's only one outcome I see where we could possibly have success.
Through, right, he went over 14 million, yeah, possible scenarios,
so
and found one.
At some point, there's got to be some sort of tragic flaw involved, because let's say, okay, Thanos has destroyed half of the sentient life on all universes. Okay, or excuse me, in this particular universe, that doesn't necessarily change the nature of, quote-unquote, man. So, essentially, maybe Gamora's world was the only world that it really worked on. Hmm. You know, he wipes out half of all life, but then you have certain worlds that are plunged into war, into chaos.
Into chaos, and yeah, they're a
You
mess.
Know what I mean? Because the leadership is gone.
Yeah.
You have certain ones where now whatever was the minority has become the majority, and they oppress
right.
other people. So, it could be a lot that still happens that could let him know that his work is grand, not grand necessarily plan. Done.
Right. Well, I've also seen another theory that says the final scene that we get of him kind of in retirement, mm-hmm, actually is the final scene of Avengers 4, and that they're doing a bit of a time jump there,
ooh,
to try to throw you off what actually happens in the next phase of the
interesting.
Movie. Well, it's an interesting theory. I don't think that there's much evidence, yeah, for it, though, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. How do they find Thanos? I mean, there's got to be a way that they're going to track him down, some clever way.
Nebula might know what planet he's on.
Yeah.
Nebula probably is.
Nebula
key.
Still being a part of the story is going to be huge because, of course, in the comic books, she's the one who takes the gauntlet from Thanos. She's overpowered by the gauntlet, and Adam Warlock is the one that takes the gauntlet and eventually leads to the Infinity Watch. I think that that's the purpose that Carol Danvers is going to end up serving. I think that that's what Captain Marvel is going to be, the one that comes in, ends up overpowering Thanos, takes the gauntlet, and is the keeper of the gauntlet, and that could start the something like an Infinity Watch storyline.
That would be really interesting.
I think that would be actually a pretty good use of both Adam Warlock, especially if he's now tasked after being, mm-hmm, created by the Sovereign to going into Soul World to save Gamora, that takes his, you know, need to have play any kind of role in the Infinity War storyline out,
yeah,
and really sets up how important and central Captain Marvel is to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Well, and that was my main thing with talking about the, you know, the Captain Marvel film, is I tried to figure out where does she fit in, because as you said before, the main cast, the main, you know, cornerstone Avengers are still there.
Yes.
And so I was trying to figure out where does she fit in terms of what is her purpose going to be, because I can't see them, you know, adding in too many more new characters at this point.
Right.
Oh, no, of course not.
But remember, Nick Fury calls her, yes, you know, on the pager.
See, I think
she's off-world. She's off...
No, I know for a fact she's off-world, yeah, but I'm talking about how does she fit in the overall dynamic in terms of even the upcoming battle, and that's why I think that was a good example.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because right now, you only have the core Avengers, Nebula, and...
Rocket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all you got.
Yeah, no, I think the fact that and to me was one of the best post-credit scenes ever. And the fact that they only did the one, I think, sort of really highlights how important that is. That, you know, Nick realizes, like, okay, this is like the end type shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
the entire
Who
world.
Who do I call when I said the world is
right,
over?
Because there are many times throughout all of these MCU movies that Fury could have called her. If,
yeah,
he had that
where
beeper.
Shit's getting kind of,
yeah,
bad.
Yeah,
the aliens started attacking New York, and, yeah, Loki is there with an infinity gem.
But
and,
nah, I'm
but
not
this
gonna.
Is, nah, yeah, this, yeah, is a way bigger,
so,
deal. Yeah.
So he knows that whatever it is that Carol Danvers can do, that Captain Marvel can do, she's the big fucking time. She is your last, yeah, last
She's the
line.
Nuclear option.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Here's another debate that I've been seeing a lot. Can all of the heroes that we lost in the snap, can they be unsnapped?
I think so. I think, first of all, you got to be able to do the vast majority of them, because you'd be dumb not to do a second Black Panther right
now. Yeah, they're your movies in the next phase.
Certain people have to come back, but what both Feige and the Russo brothers have been saying a lot of in the past 2 days, because I think they know that everyone's like, come on, you got to bring some of them back, is that the price to bring back the people who were snapped is going to be deep.
Dude, that's why you get rid of the main four. No, but I think that's like what I mean with the Soul Stone. I think that's how they're going to bring them back. You pay a soul to get a soul.
Hmm.
I think that's how we're going to see some of them come back.
You can only bring back people that you're willing to sacrifice someone else for, but you got to think.
In the Soul Gem, Gamora's the only one trapped in Soul World because she is the Soul Stone's sacrifice.
That we know for sure.
That is confirmed
by the people who snapped away, they very well could have been whisked into Soul World, too.
We don't know that.
We don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That could be... That's not a terrible theory.
It's not.
They get snapped into Soul World, because Soul World was kind of like an
infinite ether.
It served the same purpose that the Mirror Realm served in Doctor Strange.
Yeah,
it was kind of like that. So that may not be the worst theory.
No, it's not the worst theory.
By the way, Doctor Strange fight scenes, best fight scenes.
Yes,
God, I agree. So good.
Period.
I agree.
They're anime fight scenes.
I don't give a crap. I'm not knocking it.
I'm saying, like, now we can have maybe a good anime movie now because we can do it. But I think that was probably, for me, the most, I don't want to say surprising, but the most... I got the most enjoyment out of his scenes.
Yeah.
Oh, I absolutely. Think because you could just do the
Dude,
most.
How sure. chill he was as he turned yeah. to dust, because he knew. He's yeah. like, we're he's on the right
future.
Path.
No, so. He's like, literally, like, the one future that I saw, we need Tony alive, and Tony's alive. I did my job.
Yep.
Handing it off. Off to you, dude.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, I think, you know, he's going through those 14 million scenarios, and I just had this thought, like, it's the only one where they willingly gave up the Soul Stone. Because, you know, Doctor Strange is a person. He is very headstrong and, like, kind of convicted.
Yeah.
He would go... It would be a long time before he was willing to embrace a scenario where they willingly give up the Time Stone. And every other one, they fought it out.
I was going to say, I feel like the point that Strange is focusing on isn't necessarily that I have to give up the Time Stone, but that at the end of us winning, Stark is a key component.
Yeah.
I want to know if he had a future scenario that he looked at where after they got Thanos down, he knocked out Peter Quill, and they just won right there.
I mean, you could have always done that.
Like, was there a future scenario where you checked that out, maybe?
People are...
That's what you got to know. Like, in that sequence when he's trying to hold on to Thanos, like, he knows what's about to happen.
Yeah.
He's well aware of how it's going to go.
Well, see, Doctor Strange doesn't do spoilers, guys. Be like Doctor Strange.
But not just that. I think he's like, oh, okay, I knock out Star-Lord, and then, you know...
Something else happens.
Yeah, something else
yeah.
happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I lose my balance and end up knocking somebody else. Like, a million possible things.
Could be something dumb like
yeah.
that, but yeah. you never know. Yeah. I don't know why he didn't just sling ring a portal around his hand and chop the gauntlet off, but...
That would have been a better idea.
Because they did that
to Call Obsidian.
I was going to call him Black Dwarf, but that's
what he was in the comic.
Yeah, no. But apparently that's not PC mm-hmm. anymore.
By the way, Dingle Dwarf?
Yeah, that's
what I'm calling him, Dingle Dwarf.
So classic.
Awesome. Pretty awesome. I mean, all of the Thor scenes were pretty fantastic.
Oh,
I mean,
so
his interaction
Thor,
with Guardians was great.
Yeah, Thor just picking up where he left off in Ragnarok. Yeah.
And to
and
anyone
he works so good as a bit character.
He does.
And anyone who says that Thor couldn't be or wouldn't work as part of the Guardians, you're wrong.
Yeah,
wrong.
You're just wrong and stupid.
And they still, like, it's just the best on-screen chemistry
mm-hmm.
from the Guardians, like, between yeah. each other. It's literally the best chemistry of everyone.
So wait, how about this as a possibility? What if you only need to make one sacrifice to get all of the lives back because the one person that
Cap.
You bring back
it's Cap.
Has a power to bring everyone back?
That's Cap.
You think?
It's Cap.
I think it's Iron Man. Here's why. Remember the promo shot of all of the Infinity Gems, and Gamora was in it, and also Stark was in it
yeah.
too.
Yeah, I do think it will be Stark. I think that's one why Doctor Strange said, you need to survive for
yes.
my future to come to
you're
pass."
Right.
That's,
you're
it's
right.
A
you're
lot,
right.
And there's
you're
a
right.
lot that's pointing.
And also,
to that.
It's been his story. Like, look, first of all, since Iron Man,
This universe has been his story.
Tony Stark.
Absolutely.
Since Avengers 1.
Yeah, well, the creator said that we started with Iron Man.
Yes.
And it ends with Iron Man.
You know what's crazy? I sort of feel like that line that Tony has where Thanos has been in my head for 10 years.
Yes.
I sort of feel like that was a little bit of the creator's, you know, maybe Kevin Feige speaking through their characters. Yep. Because it's like the intention to build towards Infinity War has been there since the first Avengers film.
Dude, it's just amazing what the MCU has been able to do.
It really is.
Because everything hinged upon Iron Man working. Everything hinged upon, not necessarily Iron Man, but there are certain hits to work.
Once Iron Man did work,
they realized
we have an opportunity.
Yeah.
Avengers had to work.
You build up, say, you know what, can we get to an Avengers movie?
Yeah.
If Avengers works, I think we could stretch it to Infinity War.
Well, of course, because you had Thanos in Avengers, so...
But I mean, like...
Yeah, but I'm saying...
Dude, but I mean, like, at the same time, though, at the time that Iron Man came out... Dude, comic book movies were like at an all-time low. I think we were just coming off of Ben Affleck's Daredevil. It was bad.
There's a special that I need to see if I can find for you guys that actually put in place of S.H.I.E.L.D. one day, but it's about like Kevin Feige and stuff talking about the creation of the MCU early on.
I'd be interested to see that.
And basically, you know, when Disney gave them the chance, because they didn't have Spider-Man, they didn't have the Fantastic Four, X-Men.
It didn't start on Disney, it started on Paramount.
Mm-hmm. Well, specifically, they said that they looked at the stable of characters they had, which was Iron Man, Cap, even with Cap, the Hulk, Thor, that at the time, those were B and
C. Not good selling comics.
Yeah, B and C heroes, and they didn't think that they could do it.
Especially Captain America. They tried to do a Captain America film previously, mm-hmm. and it was shit.
Marvel was X-Men, yeah. Spider-Man,
yep.
Fantastic Four.
That's about it.
The Avengers were kind of like a junior group to the Fantastic Four.
The Avengers are what we would call the Defenders now.
Yes.
Yep.
That's you're 100% right.
The Fantastic Four was
Marvel's first family.
The first family, yep. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think for them to be able to do it and not do it and have to do it without X-Men actually worked in their benefit, because I felt like they had leaned way too much into X-Men because so many good stories are there.
Yeah.
Just like way before Infinity War, you would have saw maybe a halfway decent Phoenix Saga. Phase, if you will. So, you know, I think without having the X-Men, it actually forced them to sort of rethink what the roadmap could have been.
100%, yeah.
This was the thought that I could not get out of my head leaving that movie. So many characters, so many different settings, and so much that needed to get done. That movie should have felt like a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
It should have felt like an absolute mess, and it didn't.
It didn't.
Thank your editors.
That did not... feel like 2.5 hours of movie.
100%. I 100% agree with you. Also, though, it did not flinch at the notion that you probably should have seen all 18 movies leading up to this.
Yeah, right? it was not going to go back and explain anything.
And that I really appreciated. Now, I had seen the movie with someone who really didn't like that, who thought that it really needed to be a self-contained story, that if you knew nothing about...
You should be able to drop in.
The MCU, that you should be able to and drop in and enjoy this. And I actually think that that's an extension of the enthusiasm and the kind of conviction around the storytelling that the comic books had, right? Like, the comic books always said, listen, if you really like this story, you can always go get back issues.
Yeah,
you know?
They were
totally unflinching about that.
Infinity War, if you think about it, right? If you think about how the story is structured, even from the little title cards that pop up when they go to a new location, if you think about that, the entire story structure of Infinity War is a comic book.
Yeah.
It throws the window out of in terms of transitional scenes. It jumps from location to location.
It doesn't explain a single character.
Do you remember the first transition to the Guardians?
Space.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Done.
It was and it was.
And by the way, the music playing along with that told me everything I need to know about the Guardians of the Galaxy right there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's about to be lighthearted for a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 100%.
Masterclass.
It really is. Nothing has ever been attempted like this in cinema ever.
No.
18 movies in 10 years to build up to a single storyline?
They fucking nailed it.
That is crazy.
Yeah, I've never seen something...
You lay that out on a table for someone in media, They're going to fucking laugh at you.
They say, you're fucking crazy.
You're out of your goddamn mind. They would go, it's not going to work here. It's not going to work here. It's not going to work here. I don't know how the fuck they were able to do this.
Dude, just think about how many films that are out in the MCU before we got to this point of Infinity War that we could have pointed at instantly and said, before the MCU, the previous paradigm, there are points in that continuity where I could have said, that movie is going to fail. Categorically.
A talking Guardians. Tree and a talking raccoon.
Guardians.
Are you serious?
Guardians.
Fail.
100%.
I could have told you 10 years ago, Black Panther will fail.
I mean, 10 years
probably
ago.
Probably their two best movies.
10 years ago, if they had made Black Panther, they would have put Wesley Snipes in it.
And
so
it would have failed.
It would have been awful.
Flat out. But that's what I mean. It's because the paradigm has changed so much on what the comic book movie is. And Marvel has done such a good job that the company that really should be anywhere close can't even do it at all.
Because they're trying to play catch up.
Right.
They
won't actually invest the time to build it. They just want to catch up.
They were better off making episodic films.
Yep.
That's why the Dark Knight series works, and it works well, because it only briefly references his other films and it doesn't build towards anything.
Yep.
Only the MCU can do that at this point.
Yep.
They're the only company with the resources, with the patience, and with the staff and the artistry that can pull it off.
So we're almost out of time and we still have not talked about the best character in the movie, Peter Parker's best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Who, if you need a distraction, he is your man.
Oh my God, we're gonna die!
The stupidest article I've seen since watching this. Did Ned just foreshadow the whole... Shut the fuck up.
Stop it.
Shut the hell
up. No.
Stop it.
No. I love Wong, who's basically like, the sanctum is unprotected. I'm out this bitch.
Like, I just saw what he can do. I'm done. See you later.
Out.
The sanctum is unprotected. The universe is about to have half its life wiped out. Sanctum's unprotected. Sorry, dude. I got a job.
Yeah.
Deuces. By the way, like, he doesn't carry any money on him.
Yeah, that's funny. His mustache was a little bit off-putting, though. Yeah. I did not like the Van Dyke. It was not a good look for him.
You ever just had that frail where you're like, yo, man, we about to go to the next bar. No, bro, I got to go to work in the morning. I'm out.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he did.
Yeah, totally.
That's pretty much what he did.
Like a Saturday.
Oh, man. There's so many good points of this movie that we could talk about. I mean, just tons. But as Joe, you had pointed out,
we're out of time.
We are out of time.
Tune in next week on the Avengers Infinity War show.
Right. Yes. But before we go, we've got to review the radio show.
Sure do.
We started off this week talking about homegrown talent in the esports scene. You know, if you've got an organization like the London Spitfire that is based out of London, that is supposed to be representing London, but is an organization owned by Americans with Korean players, who exactly are you rooting for? How do you decide who you root for in esports? It can be kind of a complicated...
And I can tell you now, it doesn't fucking matter.
Florida's actually in a similar position. They were formerly Team Misfits, which is a European team.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
As somebody who's a big follower of soccer, world football, half of every professional team is made up from players
plus
all over the motherfucking place.
Not to mention that as esports fans, you know, with this and now, well, actually not even so much with the LCS, so really it's just Overwatch. This is the first time that even if, like, you know, Cloud9, for example, was based in America, they probably were based in a specific city, even though they didn't have it attached to them. Before, you might have had an esports team that was based near you, but now you have your team. It doesn't matter who's on it. You have a San Francisco team. You have an LA team. You have a New York team.
And not just that. Who wants to see the bum ass people who play in your town be, you know, on the stage playing with some of the best in the world? Like, that's the thing. For as much as I want representation for Detroit or the Midwest in the OWL, if it was region locked,
the best of the best,
and I had to pick with the people who play, you know, locally, and that's all I could do, I wouldn't root for my team.
Exactly. I want a Detroit esports team, and I want one that's gonna win.
You know,
I want because the five best players in Detroit, while there may be some really good ones, this moment they have to go up against the five best players from South Korea, they're gonna get their heads kicked in.
By the way, just before we move too quickly off of Infinity War, I did want to ask one thing. Did you guys get the Team Liquid commercial?
Yes.
Did you?
Yep.
That was pretty impressive.
I did not. Tell me about that.
So there was a commercial for Alienware before the movie rolled, and it featured like the entire time.
Yeah,
it was basically just glory shots of Team Liquid.
You know how with sports things, like you'll have the pictures of like the teams walking down the tunnel to like, the arena and showing like their jerseys. It was that.
It was
but
that.
With Team Liquid.
And it was a really cool moment because I was sitting there and I was like, am I seeing? Is this real?
Yeah. I heard someone further down, like leaned over to their whoever they were with, and was like, "Yeah, that's esports. That's a
that's Team Liquid."
Yeah, like basically explaining it to whoever
Super
that they
cool.
were there with.
That's
yeah.
Dude, I got goosebumps.
More
like,
of that.
It was my second time seeing Infinity War, so like I had gotten all of the big hype out of my system, and I was like, that really gave
more
me goosebumps.
That
was
please.
Very cool. That was
that's
very
really
validating.
Cool.
We also, of course, talk about the latest in esports news as well as. Esports making a not a debut but a big showing at E3 this year.
Well, they're gonna have an arena. They're gonna have an arena there this year. We've got Smash coming.
The reason I think that's big is, as we said at E3 last year, they did have some esports representation, but all they had done on the show floor was like cordoned off a little area and put like 40 or 50 folding chairs in there.
Yeah,
and there was always plenty of room in there. And the fact that now they're dedicating like an actual arena somewhere to it,
yeah,
I think it's gonna be big.
Yeah,
I think
this is exciting. The convention hall too. It's not like you have to go across town or anything like
nice.
That.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I'm into it, man. I can't wait to be able to check this out. I think, you know, since last year, we've seen a lot more, dedicated physical locations for esports. And I'm excited to see what ESL, because I haven't been able to experience an ESL event yet. I'm excited to see what ESL ends up putting together. I think that, you know, they're one of the longest standing esports organizations. They've been doing it big for longer than I think anyone that I can name outside of MLG. I think maybe MLG might be the only
that
one. That
MLG is probably the only one.
Yeah, they're very much contemporaries.
Maybe Kespa.
Maybe. But honestly, it's going to be very cool to see what they're able to put together, what they're able to present.
And not just that, I'm just hyped about the fact that E3 can't continue to really put esports on the back burner.
Yeah,
it's got to be pushed to the forefront if they want, you know, E3 to remain.
Well, and even more than that, I want to see what. We're going to get our first taste of how serious Nintendo's are going to be about esports with Smash. We're going to get our first
second taste. We got ARMS last year.
Stop it.
No.
Stop
I said
it.
Serious about
Stop
esports.
It.
You're right, though. If we get an ARMS tournament and there's not much with Smash, that you're right, that will be a taste of how serious they are.
Yeah, Jeremy, watching Quake on stage was pretty cool in 1996.
Dang, Norris.
Ouch.
We also talk about the current state of indie gaming in 2018 and what that means for the rest. Excuse me. There's my
wow. There's the burp.
That was
the
a
show.
Weird burp.
Ew.
That wasn't even.
That sounded unpleasant.
It was not pleasant.
Yeah.
It was at a weird point. I was also trying to breathe, and it was gross. we talk about the position of indie gaming in 2018 for, you know, in terms of the rest of the gaming industry, and I think that this was a really important discussion to have because I'm even kind of curious what even defines an indie game anymore
because
used to be. Smaller budgets, you know, not officially attached to a AAA publishing
small
studio.
Staff.
Yeah, small staff.
Sure.
But I mean, like, I feel like that has been
it's different now.
Disrupted.
Because
I
mentioned that at E3 last year. Now that indie game is a section on Steam, what we think of as indie is not indie anymore.
Yeah,
right.
It is just a genre.
Well,
I mean, like, you sort of got the same classifications with like indie music, like, right? Like at some point, like indie rock and roll or indie rap was like kind of like a subsection of whatever genre. And now
indie, there's a section in Best Buy with the CDs for the motherfuckers who still buy CDs. And it says
actually Best Buy took out all their CDs.
Well, you know, for the last two Best Buys that might still have CDs.
Or if you go to iTunes, I'm pretty sure
iTunes.
Indie is a
whole category.
Fucking category unto itself.
Indie's a category.
And it's filled with, like, Modest Mouse and, like, you know
and
what I mean?
Father John Misty.
The Decemberists.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other.
You know,
the
Ting Tings.
I didn't get a chance to say it.
The Ting Tings.
On the show, but something that really disappoints me is, specifically in the case of Valve and Campo Santo, is that we heard about them buying up Campo Santo because they had said, oh, we're going to start making new games. And
we
then,
don't. Where,
I'm not sure the two are
dude,
related.
You are conflate. You have consistently conflated those two statements.
Maybe, but just the idea that,
No. Why would you connect the two? We don't know.
We don't have anything to substantiate that.
Yeah, we don't
that.
Have anything to
that's
be able
pure
to
conjecture.
Say. Yes, exactly. We don't have anything to say that that's what Steam meant or Valve meant by they're putting out more games or they want to start developing more games is to hoover up indie studios. They could be two completely unrelated.
It could be. They do still want to give their resources to Campo Santo's Valley of the Gods.
Yes, they do.
So very similar to what happened with We Happy Few, which we want to give you some of our resources. It still, I think, turned what that game would have been in its own vision into something definitely not indie anymore.
Well, let's be a little bit clear that We Happy Few never really had a clear vision. I mean,
all right, that's
they
fair.
Did, the creators did, and then when people saw it, they got a different idea, and the creators, instead of sticking to their original vision, were like, well, we got to go with what people want. I don't know.
You don't?
What. No, you don't. you definitely don't. But that was the decision that they made, all the way to signing up with a AAA publishing studio. I believe it was Gearbox.
Yes, it was. There you go. Yep.
And inserting microtransactions and other semi-questionable
practices. That's not semi-questionable
practices into their game. So, you know, I think that that has a lot to do with it. And I think that I don't exactly want to see that continue.
No.
I do think that, you know, part of what defines an indie game is choosing to be an indie game, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's an active choice that the creator has to make to say, listen, I don't want to be a part of the AAA meat grinder. You know, I want to be able to
indie create... means independent.
Right, exactly. And I think that there does need to be a degree of independence that is a part of that conversation.
Yeah, there you go.
We also talk about the unsolved mysteries of gaming.
Yeah, so
your Robert Stack impression is
not
really
great.
Bad.
It's not good.
No.
Somebody say it sounded like German Obama.
I don't know where they got the German part, but it definitely started to slip into Obama.
It really did.
Yeah. I thought I would save you from that before I got, like, vaguely offensive.
Now, Joe, you actually got that from a list of 10 different ones. So are we going to see the other entries pop up here on the show one day?
It's certainly a bit that will return. There were a couple of them like that we've already hit on. Like, Polybius was on there. We've already talked about that. We're not going to hit on that again.
Yeah.
It's definitely a bit that will come back at some point. But that whole thing spawned out of, I was flipping through that list and I saw the Kill Switch one and said, this is a segment because that
Kill
is a
Switch
fascinating
is good. I've
story.
I have heard of that story before. It was very interesting.
I think it's just fun to, like, that's one that's just fun to think about. It's it's kind of like when we talked about the Air World, the Sword Quest series,
and the
tournament.
Absolutely.
Like, those are now very much based in fact, of course. Even if Kill Switch is a complete fabrication, like Sword Quest, it's really fun to think about.
The idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm kind of surprised that I haven't seen people try to imitate that, though. You know what
a
I mean?
A new, like, Sword Quest tournament?
No, not Sword Quest tournament, but try to imitate
the finite game.
Yeah, try to imitate the concept behind Kill Switch.
They did have the one game where only a certain number of it was an online game where only a certain number of accounts would be allowed to be made, and when they all died, that was it. The
I
game
do
was
remember
just
that.
Gone.
I think
I do
that's
remember
the closest
that.
We have.
That is the closest.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what happened to that game. I know we've talked about it, but
I think it kind of fizzled.
Yeah, it might have. All right, so we also talk about the latest in esports news, as well as Eric Lundgren.
That's Dolph's son, we presume.
Oh my god, yeah, I was gonna say, is that the last name of the main character,
like,
in
Ivan Drago? Yes.
Well, I was gonna say Fargo.
I think it is Lundgren.
I believe it is also Lundgren.
Yeah, there's a lot of Lundgrens, more than you would think.
Yeah.
Huh.
Lundegaard. No, it's Lundegaard. It's like Lundegaard or something like that. I love Fargo. I haven't watched that movie in a minute. But an unfortunate situation where he was making OS backup disks for Windows products.
Trying to make technology last longer, reduce e-waste, and what does he get for his trouble?
The full legal brunt of Microsoft comes down upon him.
Even the judge said, like, this is a really difficult case to sentence because I get what you're trying to do. What you did was illegal. And by the law, you broke the law. But I get where, like, I don't feel like there was malice behind what you were trying to do, and it sucks.
Well,
you hate these stories of these, you know, the big, huge, super, you know, rich multinational squashing this one guy.
Yeah.
you know, because he was.
I mean, it is a little bit of like a Robin Hood type tale right there. You know?
I mean, it but is.
Except his discs, you couldn't even use them if you didn't have a license anyway.
Yeah. I agree. I 100% agree. I mean, there's a lot that he did to try to prevent, you know, some legal damage. Yeah, but
it does go to show you once again, if you're going to walk that fine line, protect yourselves or don't live in America.
Well, and to be fair, there's a quote from him, too, saying that, you know, a lot of people talk about doing the right thing. And he's like, I didn't want to do the talk. I just did what I thought would be right to do. So.
Yeah, well, then and you see what the fruit of his labor was. We also talk about fandoms and why fandoms are both the best and worst part about being a fan of anything, about being enthusiastic about anything.
It mostly sucks, though.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's 50-50. You know, like I've had some really great experiences with, you know, like, say, the Final Fantasy fandom.
But doing things like Distant Worlds, going to Final Fantasy Fan Fest.
Yes, all of those
things. You get the best of it.
Absolutely.
Any con, in general.
I think that's where it comes down to it, is if you can get with that fandom in person, it's usually pretty good, and I think it's the anonymity of, like, all things online.
Yeah.
Where the really toxic part of it really starts to come out.
I feel like all of my, you know, really bad fandom interactions have almost always been in person.
Really? At least you get to punch people then.
Yeah. Like, legitimately. Because usually, like, for me, I don't know what it is, but on the internet, I generally can filter out most really toxic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can just see it before I get triggered and shit.
I'll just move on.
Yeah.
But in person, that's a lot harder to do than to just be rude and walk away from somebody. But I've had some really, 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 like, fucked up people, like, challenge me on some, like, Street Fighter type shit.
Really?
Did you beat them down?
And the thing is, like, I love Street Fighter. I play Street Fighter all the time. I'm not necessarily really great at it. I'm competent, but I'm not good enough to start throwing myself into, you know, online tourneys and
stuff like that
with people who can devote 9 hours a day to playing it.
You know, that's actually a really good one. People that think if you're not good at a game, you must be faking it.
Yeah.
Dude, you get that a lot. That is rampant in FGC.
Oh my gosh.
Guys, did you know I don't really like PUBG very much because I suck at it.
Oh, I'm terrible at it.
Well, you hate it then.
No, well, I mean...
No, he's just not a real fan.
He's not a real fan.
No, on nights that I haven't gotten one kill and I'm logging off, I do hate it. Legitimately. I fucking hate that game.
That makes you a true fan. And I say it out loud.
I'm like, I fucking hate this game and I don't know why I keep playing it.
And then you log in the next day.
I log in tomorrow.
It's very FF11-esque, actually.
I know, yeah.
It does remind me of that.
Love-hate relationship. We also...
You're so fucking right, Joe.
Yeah, definitely. We also talk about the latest results from the Overwatch League, as well as give a bit of a preview of the mid-season invitational that League has coming up. When does that take place, by the way?
That begins May 3rd, so by this time this is out, it'll have started 2 days
ago. All right. And it's how many days of competition?
It goes to like the 17th. It's a good bit of the month, competition. It's 2 weekends,
two
basically.
Three weekends.
Are you watching the opening round?
Live, no.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it live this year.
Where is it at?
I believe it is Berlin.
Oh, okay, so the timing.
It's overseas.
Not
so the timing.
Too terrible.
Timing,
no.
But the timing is going to be weird. It's not going to be as bad as China.
Yeah,
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's not a repeat of Worlds, at least.
Yeah.
God, I actually don't remember where it is.
Do we know where Worlds is this year?
It has...
Has it not been announced yet?
I don't think it's been announced yet.
No?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Part of me wants to say Rio, but I don't think so.
I was just curious. All right. Well, you can catch that that discussion on the show because we are basically over time here on the podcast. And we wrap up the show today asking our social media audience who their favorite voice actors are and what their favorite role that those voice actors played was with a special announcement from the man, the myth, the legend, David Hayter himself, reading one of the tweets that we got. So, Mike, if you're listening to this, you should definitely be on the lookout for this week's episode of Checkpoint Radio, because David Hayter's reading your tweet. So you should feel good about yourself or something, I guess. But that's it.
That's it. That's all.
That's it. That's all we got. We talked about
Infinity War. We talked about a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Well, this is in South Korea, by the way.
Oh, it's in South Korea.
So it's going to suck to watch for the States.
Yep, sure is.
I think I think one of my friends is actually going to that.
Oh, really?
Wow, really?
Yeah, in South Korea. Yeah.
So cool.
Anyway, all right, that's going to be it for the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. CheckpointRadio.com is where you can find out more info about the show, as well as full episodes on demand posted every Tuesday, interviews from past episodes, and much more. That's all over at CheckpointRadio.com. Stay up to date on all the latest by following us on social media. That's CheckPT Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you like the show, consider dropping by our Apple Podcast feed and giving us a rating and a review. Checkpoint Radio is a production of Westwood One. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Big thanks to our producers, Rick Scott, Kevin Graham, and Christine Corpus. For the Checkpoint Radio crew, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan, I'm Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to the Checkpoint Radio podcast. Make sure you subscribe to iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, tune into our weekly radio show. For more information and the latest on esports and gaming, go to checkpointradio.com.